What I thought we would do today is spend a little time quickly just setting the context for what LightSwitch is about, and then we'll do a series of demos. The first demo will focus a lot on the core LightSwitch experience and some of the things we've added in the core Visual Studio 2012 product, and then talk a little bit about what specifically we're doing with the ability to create HTML clients, and then do a demo of what that experience is like as well. So hopefully that'll be a good set of content for everybody, and leave you with some great understanding of what. With that, for those that aren't familiar, what is LightSwitch for Visual 2012? Well, in a sentence, we really think of it as the simplest way to create modern line of business applications for the enterprise. And when we're talking about the enterprise, really we're talking about that class of application within the enterprise, most typically associated with business unit or departmental applications. So maybe for the finance team or the human resources team or the an operations group. Not necessarily the full, scale, needs to scale to, 100,000 concurrent users with thousands of database tables behind it. We're talking something much a little bit more modest in terms of scope of the application. And that's really about a statement of where the development experience for LightSwitch is today. If you view LightSwitch, we're a model-centric experience for building these applications, which does mean we have a model that you're building up as part of the project. So you get that too big, in the hundreds of screens, hundreds of entities, and the developer experience is not quite ideal yet. Scalability application is just fine. We test these applications with large amounts of data, high numbers of tables and screens, and all of that works and behaves and performs as you'd expect. But really, you can think of it today as targeting that more departmental scope of application. Drilling in one more level of what is LightSwitch about, well, it really is a rapid application development environment. We really are focused on how do we allow you as the developer to spend your time building business applications focused on the unique rules, the unique code of your application, and less time on what I typically refer to as the plumbing. Really, if you think about it, there's a lot of common repetitive code you need to write as part of a business application, loading data in and out of a database, getting it in, putting it into UI for the user to interact with, figuring out how validation rules are going to flow between the various levels of your application. Those are things that we want to provide a good set of capabilities for you just out of the box, building on top of proven and existing best practices and patterns that have evolved across the enterprise or across the the industry. We also want to make sure that we provide a very flexible roadmap, a very flexible path for your application as the needs of the application, the needs of the organization grow. So one of the things you'll see is we allow multiple ways of deploying these applications, whether it's the traditional two-tier kind of application with client and business logic on the, UI and business logic running on the client, talking to a remote database, all the way up through a multi-tier architecture, a multi-tier deployment, leveraging things like Windows and SQL Azure. And I'll show you a little bit of that experience as we get into demos. So with that, why don't we just dive right in and take a look at the experience of building a business application using Visual Studio 2012. So let me add a little bit of content here. We'll share my desktop. There we go. Looks like everybody can probably see that by now. So what we have here is we are sitting inside of Visual Studio 2012, the release candidate. I'm actually running the Visual Studio Professional version. LightSwitch, as I mentioned, is now part of the core Visual Studio 2012 install, whether it's Professional, Premium, or Ultimate. You have the project capabilities and the experiences right there built into the product. For the purpose of today's demo, since we only have about an hour, I thought what I'd do is speed us up a little bit, and we'll start with an existing application. You'll see what I have here, oops, the wrong one, is a project that's got a set of database tables. We've got a number of tables and a number of screens here already in the application. So let's just go ahead and run this and see what the application is all about. For the purpose of today's demos, we're going to work with a fictitious company called Contoso Moving. It's a company that manages maybe residential and corporate moves and relocations. And this is a Silverlight-based application that the scheduling crew at Contoso Moving uses to manage the customers, manage employees, and actually schedule appointments. So you see, I can look at a list of customers here. I can choose a specific customer. We can see details about them. We can see appointments that maybe we have coming up for that customer. What I want to do is I want to keep enhancing this application to just make it a little bit more user-friendly. Before I go to there, you'll notice that I have a different look and feel. This is the new, we call it the Cosmopolitan theme and shell for LightSwitch. It's based on the Silverlight Cosmopolitan theme that you may be familiar with. Trying to just bring Visual Studio and LightSwitch applications to a little bit more of a modern look and feel. The templates and screen layouts that we had in the first version are still there. This is just an additive thing with the release candidate. You can apply this to existing projects or use it as part of new projects that you create with Visual Studio LightSwitch. Okay, so some of the things that we might want to do. Now, it's kind of hard for me to say this, but I think I'm going to show you some things that are considered to be a little bit more advanced in terms of LightSwitch development. That's a little strange to say advanced and LightSwitch development in the same sentence, but these are capabilities that maybe aren't quite as obvious to folks, and that's what I thought we would focus on for today. First thing I want to do is rather than just bringing up screens that are lists of customers and so forth, I thought what we'd do is create a new home screen that makes it easy for our scheduling folks to figure out what appointments are coming up and get started at some very common tasks. The first thing I might want to do is create a new query that rather than showing all appointments that have been scheduled, will allow us to just take a look at maybe the next 10 or 15 appointments that are coming up for a given day. So what I'm going to do is using the Solution Explorer here, I'm going to choose our appointments entity, I'm going to add a query. Now LightSwitch gives you the ability to create what we call modeled queries. So here I can create a query, let's call it upcoming appointments. I specify the source of that query, which in this case, because it came off the appointments entity, is appointments. Now I can go and I can add filter criteria, I can add sorting criteria, and I can add parameters. For our case, we'll do something simple. We'll just sort based on the start date, and we'll do that in ascending order. So now I have a query that's going to go and retrieve me an ordered list of appointments. But maybe what I want to do is actually just grab the next 15 appointments that are coming up. The modeling tool doesn't allow me to specify those kind of operations, but with any query in LightSwitch, we can drop in the code and add additional link queries into this model query and kind of compose them together. So over here in the property grid, I'll click Edit Additional Query Code, and then we'll drop in and write the code that we need to write. And so this is just standard link stuff, so we'll say query equals from appointment in the query. And maybe the first thing we want to do is let's filter this a little bit. So we'll say where the appointment start date is greater than or equal to today. And then we just want to grab a set of those. So we'll do the take, and we'll say maybe 15. And we'll just take the first 15 queries off of that from that result set. Now this will compose into, and so now we'll get an ordered list of those queries. Okay, now that I have the query, the next thing I'm going to do is let's go create a screen that's going to display this. And we still have our same set of templates here for the application. We'll go ahead and use a search screen. And when I drop down the data that we want, you'll see that in addition to the entities, we also have the queries that we've modeled and written showing up. So we can base this on the upcoming appointments query. And just to make it easier, we'll give this screen a different name, and we'll call it our home screen. I'll say OK, and that's now going to go and create that screen for me. I want this to be the default screen, so we'll go into the properties of our client here, go into the screen navigation area, and we can go click on Home and set that to be our default screen. I also might want to go ahead and move this up in the order within that menu command. And what you're seeing here in our screen navigation design tool is this is how we design the navigation structure of that client application. Let's go ahead and just run this and see what we've got. Okay, so we see our applications come up. We see our upcoming appointment screen is going to load. It's going to load that query, and now rather than a full list of appointments, we only have about 15 or so that are scheduled for today or later. Okay, that's great. There's a couple of things I might want to do. I might want to add a couple of commands. The other thing that the users of this application have expressed they have a lot of need to do is go quickly jump in and create a new customer or add a new appointment for an existing customer. So let's go add two commands to this screen that make it easy for our customers to navigate directly into those pieces of UI. So to do that, we're going to go into our home screen here in the designer, come up to the top here, and in the screen command area, what we're going to do is we're just going to add some new commands here. So we'll add a new button, and we'll call this new customer. Say OK. Let's add a second new button and call it new. Okay, so we have our buttons. Next thing we need to do is we need to add some logic behind the button so that when it's clicked, we navigate to the create customer or the create appointment screen. So for the new customer, we're going to go right click and choose edit execute code. And here, we'll just simply write a line of code that says application.show create new customer. In this case, there's no parameters, so we're good. Go back to our designer, right click on the new appointment, again, do the execute. And in this case, we'll say application.show create new appointment. Now, in this case, you see that we take an optional parameter that is the customer ID. So if we were maybe coming off of the customer details screen, we could already default the customer. In this case, we're not. We don't have a customer, so we'll just pass in null or nothing to that method. Okay, let's go ahead and run this and see what's happened with our application. Screen's going to load up. We're going to load that data. You see I now have my two new commands down here. Now we just have the default images. If we wanted to, we could specify our own image just via the property grid for these things. But let's go into new appointment. We'll click that. We see we have our new appointment screens come up. I can choose a customer. Let's just choose our first customer here. You see that we've defaulted the street address based on the customer. We can choose an employee. We can choose a move type and so on. Now, there's a few more things I might want to do here. I might want to go and actually do a little bit better defaulting logic around when the start date is for this appointment. Defaulting it to the current date and time is probably not what we wanted. Maybe I also want to default the end date so that by default most of our appointments are an hour, so we'll default the end date to be an hour after the start date. There are also some things I might want to do around the move type. We have a standard template that the organization uses for configuration of a move. So, you know, for a residential move, maybe we have, you know, two bedrooms, a kitchen, those kind of things. So we'd like to default the room list based on the move type. So similar to the way we've already seen some defaulting logic work for customers, let's go see how we can add that defaulting logic into this experience as well so that when someone is creating an appointment, they can do it much more efficiently. So go ahead and close the application. We'll say OK. We don't want to save those changes. Before I jump into this, at this point, what you've seen is how we can go and create a custom screen, leveraging custom queries to get a custom result set in there, and then how we can add custom commands into that screen to improve the navigation and flow of our application. Now let's go take a look at how we can go add some defaulting logic for our to make our application even that much more fluid, that much easier to use. To do that, I'm going to go back into our appointment designer here. And LightSwitch allows us a number of places where we can write code. We've seen how we can write code to interact in the UI layer in the screen. Let's take a look at how we can write some code that interacts more in the backend layer and in the entity layer when we're doing things around defaulting, for example. So when I choose appointment and I click the drop-down here, you see that we have a pattern that we implement for interacting with these entities as they're being used in the application. So basically when something's being created or when it's moving in and out of the database, you have a set of methods that you can interact with to touch that and implement your logic. So anytime things are going in or coming out, you can go do that as well as just general validation. In our case, we want to use the appointment created method to do our defaulting logic here. So we'll go in here and we'll say that when the appointment's being created, let's do a couple of things. Let's say, let's default the move type equal to something like, you know, residential. and will default the start date to be the current day. Maybe let's go ahead and add a day and say let's default it to tomorrow. So we'll start, we'll by default schedule our appointments tomorrow. And then end date, we'll just have that equal to the value of the start date plus 1 hour. So that now we'll have a default scheduled start date. Now I mentioned the other thing we wanted to do was default the end date. So even when they set the specific start date, we have the end date going to still be an hour. So in that case, I'll just go ahead and click on the start date here, go back up to our write code, and now you see we have a set of methods that we can interact with when things are happening to the property. So in this case, we'll do start date changed, and we'll just go in here and we'll say what we want to do is have the end date equal to the start date, and then have the end date, you know, equal to the end date dot hours add one. So now we're defaulting it based on the current date and time of the appointment that was scheduled. So let's go ahead and run this and see how that little bit of code works. So we've got our application here. Let's go ahead and say new appointment. Now you see we've defaulted to tomorrow already, or tomorrow my time. If we maybe say and set this for Wednesday, you'll see that we've kept that in sync. If I go change our time here to say it's a 10 o'clock appointment, you see we've now gone and defaulted that to 11. So we see all of that defaulting logic is working. In this case, these properties are actually being that code is actually executing on both the client and the server. So we're not actually making a round trip in this case to get those new updated defaults. This is taking advantage of capabilities that shipped as part of the .NET framework in Silverlight, known as the transparent assemblies. It's the same actual assembly that can execute both in Silverlight as well as in the full .NET framework, and that's what this code is actually executing as. Not something we had to think about as a Lightswitch developer, just something the Lightswitch design pattern takes care of for us. Okay, so we've got our defaulting logic for the appointment start and end date. Let's add our logic around the move type. We'll just throw that away. We'll come back to our designer here, and we'll choose move type, write code, and go into change event for the move type. Now here what we want to do is let's go and make sure that this is really the first time the move type has been set. If they've already got some sort of room configurations defined, I don't want to go and mess with those. So we'll just go in here and we'll say if rooms.count is less than one. So if we haven't specified any rooms yet, then we'll go ahead and just sort of work with the default based on the room type that was set up. So we'll just do a simple select case on the move type. And you see I have some values set up here. So we'll just do, you know, case, move type, values, dot residential. And now we can go in and we can write some code that actually starts programmatically adding rooms into the data set for this specific appointment. So we'll just say, you know, with rooms, and then we'll say dot add, specify a new room. We'll take advantage of the with syntax, so we can say, you know, the name is going to equal, and I've got an enumeration value here. I'll start with living room, for example. We'll close that off. Close off that. And go. And now I can just keep writing code here that's actually going to allow me to programmatically build up the rest of those rooms. Rather than watching me type that, let's just go in here and drag some code in and see where all I'm doing is continuing to follow that pattern through this code. So we're adding a number of rooms for the residential type, adding a few less rooms for apartment, significantly fewer rooms for business and storage. Now let's go ahead and get one extra with statement in here, so let's get that taken care of. And now we should be set. Let me double check that. Looks good. Just go ahead and run this. We see our appointments have come up. We go in and say new appointment. Again, all of our the faulty logic is still sitting here, so we can go and say we're going to schedule this for Wednesday at 11 o'clock, default to noon, choose a customer, employee, me, and now this time we'll choose move type, and let's say residential home. You see, as soon as I've selected it, we've added all of those default room configuration. That room, that template configuration has now been programmatically added. When I say save, these changes will now be saved back to the database, and we'll have a new appointment. And if I close this, come back to our home screen and refresh, we should see a new appointment showing up here for tomorrow. There it is. With that exact configuration, if I drill into it, we see it's assigned to me, and we see the room configurations that we expected. Okay, pretty straightforward. We've now seen how we can go and do a bunch of configuration work within LightSwitch to create some custom screens. We've seen how we can create some custom queries, both modeled as well as adding in our own code, link code, to compose with that modeled query. And then we've also seen now how we can go and write some good defaulting logic, so when things are being created, we can set appropriate values, and we can also add programmatically information into the data set as part of building our application. Take a minute here, and let me switch back over, see if we've got any questions that have queued up. Doesn't look like it, so that's good. We'll just kind of keep going. Okay, so that's all great, but you know what would really be nice would be for the users of this application, maybe, that are actually going to go make and look at some of these appointments, rather than just showing them the list of appointments that are coming up over the next 15 appointments coming up, let's filter it down even more and show them only the appointments that they're going to, so they only see their set of appointments. And to do this, we'll take advantage of some of the kind of authentication and authorization support that LightSwitch provides. You see here, currently we've been set up to not do any kind of authentication. We support Windows authentication as well as forms-based authentication. These are things that we've done since the initial version of LightSwitch. This is all built on top of the ASP.NET membership services. So under the covers, if you have another authentication system in place and you want to leverage that, as long as you can create an ASP.NET membership provider to access your data, you can plug that in to LightSwitch and use your own back-end authentication systems. One of the things we've added in LightSwitch for Visual Studio 2012 is much better support for using Active Directory security groups as a way of authenticating users or doing user permissions within a LightSwitch application, as opposed to just doing individual users. Now, for our case, what we're going to do is, rather than specify a bunch of users, let's go ahead and just use any Windows authenticated user. So if I can log into the machine, I can run the application. Okay, so we have authentication turned on now, which means I'll actually have a set of credentials. And let's take advantage of those credentials, and we'll go into our appointments, and let's create a new query that will filter the appointments based on the current user. So we'll only get the appointments for the logged in user. So we'll go in here, let's add a query. Again, we'll do it off appointments. And let's call this one, appointments for current user. We'll pull that off of the appointment screen. Since we're going to pull it off of that, let's do that same sorting here. So we'll sort by the start date in ascending order. Now again, we want to filter based on the current user, so that's something we're going to have to drop into some code to do. So we'll go back into our edit query code, and in here we'll write a line of code to filter this down based on the current user. So similar to what we did before, we'll go up here and we'll say, query equals appointment in query, where the appointment, the employee for the appointment's username is equal to the application.user.name. Okay? And so now we go and we're going to filter this down based on the current logged in user. Let's do one more thing. Because I still want to go and just grab 15, rather than rewriting that query and rechanging the code, what we can actually do is go back into our upcoming appointments query and say that the source, rather than going directly to the appointments entity, we're going to have it use this query we just created, the appointment for current user, as the source for this additional query. And now we'll see these two queries will compose on top of each other for one result. And because I've done that, what I should be able to do now is just run the application, and we should see that my home screen will come up with only appointments that are in the future that are assigned to the current employee, which in this case is me. And this, of course, is all assuming that I've got the correct username on that employee. So let's see if this comes back with some results for us. And there we go. We see we have two appointments coming up that have been scheduled for me. If I go drill in and look, we should see that each of those have kind of me as the current employee on there. Okay, so we've seen how we can take advantage of the current login user to do some additional query capabilities and filter our query sets and so forth down. One of the things we also might want to do is use that authentication system to control the access to pieces of our or portions of our application. Let's say in this case that only certain employees are allowed to actually create appointments, and we need to check for a specific permission to do that. So again, going back into our properties here, the way we do this with LightSwitch is we just define a token that is the permission or the thing that we want to check for. So in our case, we'll create one called can create appointment. Give it additional display values and descriptions to make it easier for the administrator of the application to understand what these various permissions are. In our case, we'll just go ahead and leave it as is. And now what we can do is we can go in and we start adding code to check for this permission and make sure that the current user has actually the ability to do it. So the first place we'll do this is we'll start on the back end in the service tier of our application. And we'll see that when I choose appointment and look at the code, we see in addition to those methods for interacting with the data, we have this set of methods that we call the access control methods. And you see they're basically just a can perform operation, so can delete, can insert, and so forth. So I'll go into the can insert method, and what we'll do here is we'll just write a simple line of code that checks for our new can create appointment permission. So what we'll say is we'll just say result equals application dot user dot has permission and create appointment. You see we get those coming back as nice, you know, enumerations that make it very easy for us to code against. Let's go ahead and run this and we'll see what happens. So we're going to have our list of upcoming appointments. I'll say create new appointment. We'll go in here. Let's take some defaults, you know, choose a customer, choose an employee. Use, you know, a smaller thing. And now when I say save, what we'll see is we're actually going to get an error that I don't have permissions to perform this action. And so it's going to not allow us to save those changes. Okay, that's good. That protects us on the service tier so that no matter who is calling the application, whether it's our client or another one, we know that those permissions are going to be honored. If you don't have the permission, we won't allow you to perform the operation. But this still isn't the best user experience in the application. We'd like to not have our users go all the way through creating an appointment only to find out they can't do it. So let's stop them a little bit earlier in the process. To do that, we're going to go into our home screen here. We're going to choose our new appointment button, and we're going to use and write some code in the can execute code here. So what you're seeing is a convention, a pattern that we implement that makes it straightforward for developers using LightSwitch to figure out where do they need to add the code to perform the custom rules that they expect for their application, and then LightSwitch will handle calling it at the appropriate time. So again, just like we did in the server, we're going to go in here and say result equals application dot user that has permission can create appointment. And now what we should see here, when we run this now, we will see that the home screen will come up, but our new appointment button will be disabled by default because I don't have those permissions. And you see down here, new appointment has in fact been disabled because we didn't grant ourselves that permission. Now that's great. Now how do we know this is really working? Well, let's go back in to the server properties again. And you'll see that for developers, to make it a little bit easier to debug your application, we actually give you the ability to turn individual permissions on or off for a given debug session just to test and validate. So you don't have to go and create a bunch of different users that you log in with to test the different permissions. You just simply go and turn on a permission for a debugging session. So now when I go in here, we should see that our create appointment button will be enabled again. If I go in to the application, I should be able to continue creating an appointment and actually save it back to the database. We see, yes, in fact, our create appointment button is available. We can go and create an appointment for 10 a.m. Pick a different customer here. Me is the employee again. Apartment room type. Now I say save. And that has been saved back to the database. Close this, refresh my screen here. We should see a third appointment show up. There it is. So we see everything is working as we expected, and our permissions are now taking taking effect as part of the application. So what we've seen is how using Lightswitch, we're creating a logical multi-tier application with a database, a service tier, and a client application. That database, in our case, because we were creating it, is going to be, when we deploy it, we can deploy it as a SQL Server database. The service tier has been created and is actually exposed via the OData protocol. And actually, what I'm going to do is just to show you a little bit of that, let's go into our client. We've been using the Silverlight Outer Browser desktop client. What we're going to do is I'm going to switch this to a web client for a minute just to make it a little bit easier to do one thing. And I'm going to go ahead and run this. Now, I mentioned because we were creating an OData service by default, what this is actually doing is it's allowing us to expose the data and business rules that we've created as part of this application to other applications. So we don't have to use just Lightswitch to create these applications. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in here, I'm going to grab the first part of this URL. Get that away so people can see that better. Copy this over here, paste that in, and then just using a naming convention, so we'll say application data. The naming convention is based on the name of the data source in Lightswitch. We create a .svc file for that. Now when we see I hit that, we see that I've got the list of entities coming back in OData. If I go in here and say, let's go drill in one more and say customers, we're now going to see here's all of the customer data coming back as part of that query. Now I can just go write any additional OData style query I want or use any OData compliant client. I could do things like Excel Power Pivot. For example, if I want my customers to be able to pull data down into Excel really easily, or just create any other kind of application I might want to that can read and write OData. The thing I know is that all of my logic, rules, authorization is all going to be adhered to in the back end because it is the same service as the one we were using from Lightswitch, from our Lightswitch client to begin with. Okay, so I think that's pretty powerful and pretty interesting for, you know, really creating a great data service very quickly. Okay, we've got our application. The last thing we need to do is actually go and deploy this to maybe our test environment. What you'll see here is that what Lightswitch allows us to do is go and create these applications, deploy them either as the Silverlight Outer Browser desktop, deploy it via the browser, which in this case is still going to be a Silverlight client. It's just now going to be running within the Silverlight sandbox of the browser. Or new in Visual Studio 2012 is the ability to just deploy that service. So if all you wanted to do is use Lightswitch to create your data services, you can now do that, and we'll just deploy that OData service for you. So we'll go ahead and stay with the web, say next. And here we have the ability to either deploy to an IIS server. So this would be, you know, the configuration most commonly used for an on-premise, you know, behind the firewall deployment. We now support the ability to use the publish settings that IIS exposes, so you can gather all of that additional data. So actually, if I have one, which I think I might, I can go down here to my downloads, say OK, and we'll automatically pull in all those values. Of course, we can also deploy to Windows Azure. I'll come back and show you that in a second. So now you notice that because I had said and specified a publish setting, all of these values were populated for me. We've got the service URL, the name of the application, the username and password for actually using WebDeploy. In this case, that is exactly what we're doing. We're creating an MS deploy package using the web deployment tool, and we're going to send that up to the IIS server and let IIS configure the application and so forth. If I didn't have permission to talk to the server, we can create a package on disk, and now you have an MS deploy package that you can use and hand off to the administrators of your server environment to finish those publishing for you. Security settings, we let you specify whether or not there's an application administrator, so the first admin that you need for the application, whether or not you want to use HTTPS, you know, for behind the firewall, for example, maybe we don't need to do that, and whether you want to use a digital signature for your application. Last thing we need to do is specify the credentials for the database. So here again, we're asking for two sets of credentials. The first one is the user ID and password that you want the application to run as. So when it's fully deployed, this is what the middle tier will use to connect to that backend data source. The second one is the actual credentials that you need to publish the application. So these would be the DBA or DBO level credentials. Hopefully those are different. They don't have to be, but just trying to encourage a good practice here. When we say finish, we'll see a summary and we can go off and publish this. I mentioned that we also support deploying to Azure. So if I'd gone in and chosen the Azure route, we see just like Visual Studio does, we also support the ability to go and have that Azure publish settings file. I've already downloaded one and used it. So we can now go and call that same set of service management APIs that the rest of Visual Studio uses to make it easier and more seamless to go and publish your solution to Azure. No longer you have to go back and forth between the portal, the Azure portal, and Visual Studio copying GUIDs and certificates and those things around. So you see that, you know, I could go through here and I can specify the cloud services I have. If I didn't have one right from within Lightswitch, I can go and create a new hosted service for myself and so on. The rest of the experience is exactly the same as we saw for the IIS path. Okay, I won't go ahead and finish those because the rest of that is not really important. But so far what you've seen is the ability to use Lightswitch to create an application. We've seen how we can create custom queries both through the modeling tool and through code, and we've seen how we can actually compose those queries together to create an even more interesting query and build off of itself. We've seen how we can implement code to create custom rules. So in our case, we did it for defaulting. And we also saw how we can take advantage of the Lightswitch's sort of access control system to tailor the application based on the current user and allow people to have access to different parts of the application based on their login credentials and the permissions that have been assigned to them. Okay, so that's that. Let's switch back to the slides for a second. Give everyone a little bit of a breather. Oops, wrong slide. Let's switch back to my slide. I mentioned the other exciting thing that has happened in the last few weeks was the fact that last week at TechEd North America, Jason Zander announced that we're adding the ability to create standards-based HTML clients using the same productive Lightswitch development experience. Now, the goal here and the motivation was really twofold. I mean, the primary motivation we had was that going out and talking to a number of customers, we saw that a trend was really starting to emerge. People were starting to use and bring these devices into the enterprise, and they wanted their solutions to run on them, right? And the most common one that we were seeing was the tablet or slate-style device, whether that be from Apple, whether that be a device running Android, or in the future, expecting, obviously, Windows 8 devices as well. So that's great. The challenge there being, they don't all run the same native set of technology. And Lightswitch technology wasn't necessarily going to run well on most of those devices. So we needed the ability to allow our Lightswitch developers to target those touch-centric devices. As part of that, we also spent quite a bit of time looking at what type of applications, what were the primary things people were trying to do and accomplish when targeting those devices. And what we found was that the number one thing people were trying to create was more of a companion application that would be targeted and tailored at that device. So much smaller scope of the application, very, very tailored to a specific task, and obviously really designed around a touch-centric user experience. These are going to complement an existing application, whether it was an existing application built using Light Switch and the Silverlight desktop, or an existing desktop-based application you had in your environment. And of course, we wanted to do this in a way that would remain consistent with the user experience. So if you're familiar with building applications in Light Switch today, those same approaches would carry forward to building the HTML client. Then we also knew that we needed to go and address the broader spectrum of devices. And so we chose to create this experience based on standards, HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So with that, let's take a quick look at a little bit of what we can do in that space, taking advantage of Light Switch's soon to be available in preview support for building HTML clients. So let me switch back to my desktop. See it load? Okay, looks like it's loaded. Let's go switch over to a different version of the project. So we'll go over here. Let me just run this and show you what I have. Basically, what I have here is sort of the end point of where we were with the last project. So we have our basic application. It's a little bit different. Same general idea. You see, I did some things differently. Put the buttons in different places and so forth in this one. But same basic application. What we want to do is take advantage of this new capability. And so now what I'll do is I'll right-click our solution. I'll choose Add Client. And here we see that we have the ability to now add an HTML client. Call this our mobile client. Say OK. We're going to add this into our solution. All right. Let me collapse some of this stuff up. We'll collapse that client. We see we now have this new mobile client added to our solution instead of the startup project. We'll go in here. We'll just start adding screens. We'll do a browse data screen. We'll go in here. Let's choose our upcoming appointments query. And give us a different name. Let's call it home. Say OK. You see very familiar Light Switch sort of design experience there. Let's go ahead and hit run. Apologize for the performance here. I'm actually running a build from just the end of last week that actually has got a developer debug build in it, so it's not even optimized. But I wanted to make sure you got to see the latest and greatest stuff. What you see here is we're going to load this up. Our application is going to load. Hopefully, there we go. And over here on the left, you see we're creating some dynamic HTML. Here it comes. We'll go query against the server and see what appointments are upcoming for this customer. There we go. Then we see we have a set of appointments. Now what's neat here is just because this is standard HTML, I can use all of the existing HTML and JavaScript tools that have been added into Visual Studio 2012 as part of my Light Switch development experience and so forth. So if I come over here, first we can just look. We can use the DOM Explorer. Go into selection mode. We can select anything in here. Once we do the selection, we see that we're being drilled into that node or that element of the DOM. And you see here that we just have standard-based HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. We have spent a lot of time, and we will continue to spend a lot of time, making sure that the HTML we generate as part of these Light Switch applications looks familiar, is readable to an HTML developer. It looks very much like something you would write yourself. Sure, there may be an extra div or two in here just, for our own convenience and organization, but you'll see that the general look, the general feel of this should be very familiar, should be very similar to what you would have created yourself had you gone and manually built this application. Okay, so we have a basic screen there. Let me show you, let's add one more screen to view the details of an appointment. We'll say add screen. Let's use the view details option. We'll go grab appointment, just like we had in the Silverlight desktop client creation experience. We see that we can go and choose related data as well, so we can grab photos and rooms for an appointment. We'll say OK. And that's gone and added that screen. One thing that we did in the HTML client that's unique and we didn't have available in the Silver client was also allowing you to use these declarative techniques to create more and implement more of the patterns that are common in these applications. So you see that when I choose an item here in the list, I have the ability to go and implement an action on tap. So we've added the notion of actions. Tap is the first one. We'll include some other ones, probably things like swipe and other common gestures that people do on these touch-centric devices. And now I can go in here. I can choose what I want to happen when the user taps on something. We say I want to view the detail, and then we'll specify the binding. So we say we want to take the upcoming appointment, and we want to take the selected one, right, and pass that into our detail screen. We say OK. Go ahead and run this. See that we will get our list. Welcome appointments. We can now drill into one, and we now see the detail for that specific appointment showing up. And so far, we haven't had to author any code. Now, I'm going to fast forward a little bit and show you a little bit of just sort of how this is actually being used and the fact that this is just standard HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So one of the things I might want to do is actually go and change the look and feel of that list. So to do that, we're going to go down in here to our client. We're going to switch the views. So rather than looking at this from the logical view, I'm going to switch to a file view. And you'll see that as part of this mobile client, we've also tried and are striving to keep the layout of this project consistent with the layout of standard web projects within Visual Studio and standard HTML projects. So you see I have a content area that has my CSS, resources, images, and so forth. I also have a script area that allows me to drop in my own JavaScript and so forth. What I want to do is I'm going to add a new CSS that will allow me to take that list, and rather than be sort of a long kind of banded bar, we're going to make it more of a tile view. So we'll go in here, we're just going to say add new item. We're going to choose a style sheet, and we'll call this tile list.css. And now I'm just sitting here inside of the Visual Studio CSS editor. I could go and use all of the CSS editing capabilities for purpose of speeding ourselves up today. Let me go in here and just drop in some CSS. You'll see what I'm doing is I'm using tile list to take all the unordered, to style the unordered list items, lists, and then for the unordered list items, creating a list style that would give me a little bit more of a tile. Next thing I need to do here is let's just go into our default.htm, and what we'll do is we'll go include that CSS, so we'll add a new link here, style sheet link type S, and then we'll specify the reference. In this case, I'll just use the little picker tool here to go into my content, choose my tile list.css, and add that. So now I've got that as part of my project. Go back over here to our list, and what we can do is write some code so that when the and interact with the rendering of this HTML. So we're gonna use the appointment post render method, and in here we can write a simple line of jQuery code, simple line of JavaScript to actually go and add that CSS class to our thing. Now I'm gonna do this longhand, so we'll say element dot find, and we want to find the unordered lists, and then we're going to add that tile list class to all those unordered lists that we found. Now, if I run this, what we should see is that the look and feel is going to be a little different. We should go from those broad single bars to more of a styled tiled kind of view that will flow nicely as we change. Let's just continue. Oops, broke something big time. Did that break? All right, let's stop. Go back up. What did I use? Ah, didn't close my. There we go. That will cause problems. Let's fix that. Run it again. Appointments, see that they're now styled, but make this a little bit broader. You see, you know, so you can imagine that if I'm sitting on a desktop, I have a viewport that maybe looks like about this big. Maybe on a tablet in landscape mode, you know, I might be looking more like this, or maybe I'm even closer to, you know, to that kind of width. When I take that tablet and put it in portrait mode, you know, up and down, looks like this. And then actually, if I was to access this maybe from a smartphone, you know, I may have a viewport that's even smaller and looks like this. And you see that in all those cases, we're flowing things around nicely. And keeping the application running and looking decent. Now we could go ahead and we could continue working, show you how we could actually go and take over the complete rendering of that and put whatever content we wanted in there, and so forth. But seeing how we're going to be running out of time here, let's go back to our slides and just sort of wrap up. So hopefully what you've seen is how we can keep that same productive experience and now add HTML, JavaScript and CSS client support to the application, taking advantage of that same set of services that we had created, same business rules and business object. We can do it as a companion, like you saw me do in this example. Of course, we could go and create brand new projects that just consist of the HTML client and backend services as well. That hopefully you've seen a little bit of why I kind of feel and believe that, you know, Lightswitch for Visual Studio 12 really is the simplest way to create these modern line of business applications for the enterprise. If you're interested in learning more, a lot of great resources out there. We've got a community that's really starting to grow and take off. So the team, we have a blog, MSDN blogs, blogs at MSDN/Lightswitch, the MSDN.com/Lightswitch Development Center. We have a lot of great resources out there. Beth Massey from my team puts together a lot of great content for that Dev Center, short how do I videos and so forth for how to learn these things. We've got a set of forums where you can ask questions. And, of course, you can friend us and follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well.